You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The government has indicated
The Wire.
Last week, Donald Trump pleaded not guilty on 37 charges related to the handling and possession of classified US documents in his Florida estate in Mar-a-Lago. Trump is also facing trials in New York, Georgia, and Virginia in relation to fraud, election interference, and the January 6th insurrection. To talk more about Trump's legal woes, I spoke to Scott Optikin, Associate Professor in the Faculty of Law at the University of Auckland.
If Trump is found guilty, what are the potential penalties?
Well, Trump's been accused of some pretty serious crimes. In a nutshell, he's been accused of unlawfully taking and retaining classified documents relating to U.S. national defense secrets from the White House to Mar-a-Lago. And then he's additionally charged with not giving them back when the government asked for them back and in response to a lawful subpoena, and in fact hiding them and lying to his lawyers and investigators about having them and causing other people to lie as well. And that has also led to an obstruction of justice charge in addition to the illegal retention of documents charge. So he's facing some pretty serious charges, and the evidence in the case comes from witnesses and various other things. And of course, the search warrant executed at his home last year by the FBI, which turned up the documents. Many of the charges he's facing have maximum penalties of 20 years. If he was sentenced consecutively on all 37 counts, he could go to jail for up to 400 years, but sentencing doesn't work that way. Sentences work concurrently, and most people who've done the calculations have suggested that if he is convicted of the obstruction and unlawful retention charges, given the current sentencing guidelines in the U.S., he would probably face somewhere between 9 and 12 years in prison. But whether a former president would ever go to prison, is kind of uncharted territory. I think it's unlikely he'd ever serve any actual jail time, even if he was convicted, given security and other concerns. But it's possible. Certainly other people charged and convicted of these offenses could certainly expect to go to jail for a significant amount of time.
An initial trial date has been set for the 14th of August, but how long will the judicial process take, you think?
So that just happened this morning by Judge Eileen Cannon down there in Palm Beach in Florida. Yeah, I think that's just a signal from her that she wants, to move things ahead. But nobody expects the trial to happen, that quickly. It's basically impossible. I mean, the lawyers just have to get security clearances, which just started and can take months to actually review the documents. So that's just kind of a bit of a signal from her that she'd like things to move quickly. The expectation of most people is that the trial would take place sometime in 2024, toward the end of 2024. But even that, maybe unclear. We've got the presidential election coming up in November of 2024. He's got other charges, other trials he's facing in New York, possibly other cases in Georgia. He's being investigated in Georgia for fraudulent election activities there. And of course, Jack Smith, the prosecutor who brought this case, the documents case, is still investigating him for his role in the January 6th insurrection X number of years ago. So, possibly toward the end of 2024, but the presidential, cycle could interfere with that. Other cases could interfere with that. There are many people who think this case won't happen even until after the election. So that would push it into early 2025. We're just going to have to see. But there's no way this is going in August.
How problematic is it that Eileen Cannon, a Trump-appointed judge, has been appointed to this case? And can judicial integrity be questioned because of her appointment?
So the fact that she's a Trump-appointed judge doesn't matter, because federal judges all have to be appointed by some president. And it's never been considered bias that the president who appointed her, of course, she also has to be confirmed by the Senate, so it's not just the president. But it's never been considered bias that, you have been appointed by a president and you happen to be overseeing a case against that president. I mean, it's unprecedented, but that in and of itself doesn't show bias. She made some rulings earlier in this documents case involving the propriety of the search warrant that seemed to show quite a bit of favoritism towards Trump and treated him as an exceptional case. She was roundly slapped down legally by the 11th Circuit, which is the appeals court above her, which is very, very conservative, who said basically that she acted, outside the law and showing excess favoritism to Trump. And then she, her decisions were reversed. So the question is an interesting one. I mean, at the moment, I don't think there's actually enough, given the legal standard for asking a judge to recuse themselves for bias. There really isn't enough there to suggest that she is biased or favorable towards Trump. Her earlier ruling would suggest that, but, you know, possibly she's now kind of gotten the message from the appeals court that she's got to sort of treat Trump like everybody else. The Justice Department's, the U.S. Justice Department's, you know, rules and the law related to asking a judge to recuse himself from a case would not suggest that she should be recused at this point. But I think the Justice Department is probably taking a wait-and-see attitude. If future rulings in the case show excessive favoritism to Trump and don't seem to be correct on the law, then they might ask for recusal. But at the moment, they would have no intention of doing so and no real ground. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
What happens if he wins the 2024 election? Would he be able to pardon himself and his close accomplices?
We've never had someone run for president, you know, under indictment for these kind of serious charges, facing other criminal charges in the states and possibly even a charge of aiding and abetting an insurrection against the United States. First, he has to become the nominee, and we'll know that sometime in 2024. But if he is, and if he does win the presidency, he can certainly pardon anybody around him for federal crimes, not for state crimes, but for federal crimes. And whether he can self-pardon if he was convicted of these crimes, and that, of course, would be extraordinary. I mean, he'd be a sitting president who'd be convicted of federal crimes. And the issue of pardon, of course, doesn't arise until he's convicted. But assuming he's convicted, it's just completely uncharted legal territory whether a president could self-pardon. So we would just have to see. I don't think he can. I think many scholars who've looked at it don't think he can. But the actual technical language of the pardon power in the Constitution appears to be rather unlimited. But all of it's a moot point until he becomes the nominee, wins the presidency, and is also convicted. Now, if he wins the presidency and the case hasn't gone to trial yet, short of pardoning himself, he'll just make the case go away because he can direct the Justice Department, which he would have the power to do then as president, simply to drop the case. But the direct answer to your question is nobody knows.
What holes in the U.S. judicial system does this trial reveal, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I mean, if it really reveals so much holes, I mean, I actually think it may just be the opposite. I think it shows that everybody is, you know, equal under the law. I mean, you know, the idea that a search warrant would be executed at the home of a former president was, you know, extraordinary. It was based on full legal process with full protection of rights, and it actually turned up the evidence they were uncovering. You know, Trump had every opportunity to, you know, make his case before now, to not get indicted, to return the documents. He's been dealt with very fairly and even handedly in this case, in New York, in Georgia, and possibly with the upcoming, you know, case on the January 6th insurrection. So I actually think instead of pointing to, you know, to holes in the criminal justice system, I think it actually is a pretty good example of equal justice, you know, under the law, no matter how powerful or what kind of, you know, money you have or what position you possibly held. Of course, you know, the opponents, you know, Trump's supporters or whatnot are claiming, you know, unfair treatment, witch hunt, selective prosecution, but it's actually just the opposite. It's nothing of the kind. But I think if there is one lesson to be taken from this is that, you know, the law applies, you know, to everybody.
That was Scott Optikin, Associate Professor in the Faculty of Law at the University of Auckland, talking to me about Donald Trump's recent legal woes.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.